It's time again for the Scotty Johnny podcast with your host, Scotty Johnny himself, John Barnett, and the ego himself, Cheddar Talk, Aaron Flottam, talking Wisconsin sports, NFL through D3, college hockey, doesn't matter. Two mics, two crusty vets, two opinions, one based in reality and one based in what do you bet on Twitter, with music by Delete Great Cars and Trucks. Here's John and Aaron.
Welcome, welcome, one and all. Welcome into the Scotty Johnny podcast. I am your not-so-humble host, Jonathan Barnett. And with me, as per usual, I have Aaron Cheddar Talk Flottam.
Hey, John, what's going on, man? Real-time Bucks game number two against the Pacers tonight. And I see, wait, there's somebody else on here. There's a third face. What's going on here?
Oh, is that the Undertaker's music? No, it's... Who is it? Friend of the show, Pete. How are we doing, Pete?
It must be playoff time, gentlemen. Glad to be here tonight talking a little bit of Bucks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're afraid if we don't get you on fast, then we'll end up not, you know, we'll just be doing requiems. But we'll
you're,
see.
You're
we'll
afraid.
See. I'm afraid. I am afraid at this point, yeah.
John is very afraid, by the way, Pete. I think we've talked about this in IRL. Yes, but John thinks the Bucks aren't going to get out of the first round, but we can talk about this.
So we'll get into all of that in a minute.
But what are the stats, John?
What we'll start off here is we'll say that we are on most of the socials. You can find the show itself at Scotty Johnny Pod, which is the name we have for the show on Mastodon, X, and on Blue Sky. And you can also follow myself. You can follow me, Jonathan Barnett, at Not So Humble Host on X, at Scotty Johnny on Mastodon, and at J.E. Barnett at Blue Sky. Aaron, where people find you?
John, you can find me at Cheddar Talk on the X Twitter. I'm fun. I would like to point out before we move it on to the next person. So the next guy that you're going to talk about, he still has a 2-foot vertical, John. Oof. I know that for a fact.
So I never got there once. All right. And Pete, I know you're on Twitter. I follow you. Aaron follows you. Where does everyone else find you if they're looking for you?
You can find me at Milwaukee's Best. That's MKESBEST. Similar to the beer who's never offered me anything for that Twitter handle.
I keep working it. Yeah, someday. So they'll figure it out sooner or later.
They got to work this out. They got to make this happen. Oof. All right. We are, as we said, watching the game as this happens. So let's roll right into everything that we have here with a little bit of Milwaukee talk today. With a segment of our show that we're going to call Our Main Event.
Starting things off with the main event.
All right. So as main event happens here, just for timing purposes, so you know when I'm recording, the Bucks just managed to not actually even inbound the basketball in the fourth quarter here, down by 10.
Is that like Malik Beasley in the first half on a 3-on-1 just dropping the ball and letting it roll out of bounds? Because that was no, he dropped it, picked it up, and they got blocked. Yeah,
this one was a side in the Bucks zone. Okay. They ran a pick at center court, and Dame comes in and runs around, and then down back past half court, ball never comes in, and then Brooke just has to go running out after it with two guys on him. And you're like, well, this is never going to work. We're just done. We're going to start while this game is going on, though. We're going to talk game one, which is happier times. You know, back in the day, the Bucks won a game and they won it rather convincingly in rather
scoring 3 days ago. Yes.
Biggest things just in terms of just looking at the game itself was Bucks get out by over 20 in the first half. Are just murdering them. And there's a point in the game where Dame has 29 points and the Pacers had 29 points. And he ended up with 35 in the first half and then didn't score in the second, but it didn't matter.
He didn't play much in the second half. And there's been some talk about it too. So Ant over at the Timberwolves had a heck of an end of the third quarter the other day against the Suns in game one. And then I'll let Pete talk to this one. But, so people are talking about between that Ant performance and the first half of Dame performance, what like two of the greatest playoff performances, like just like to take over games in the last decade. What do you think, Pete?
So looking at when you look at Dame's 35 in the first half, I mean, he was playing unbelievable. The team was playing unbelievable. I think Portis had like a no-look layup that he kind of caught like around his hips and ended up tossing in. When we were looking at game one, I think everybody knew, was like, okay, this is a special half that we're probably not going to see again. And we should, and ended up running away with that game. But when you're looking at those types of special performances, we're in the playoffs now, so we're looking at adjustments, right? And I think one of my favorite things that you brought up a second ago, when Dame had 35 and a half, he didn't force anything in the second half, which, you know, they threw some different schemes at him, which you didn't see. You saw a lot more doubles coming off of screens, focusing on Dame. But he only took 5 shot attempts in that second half, and he was getting the rest of the team involved. And I think at that point, your hope is, if you're the leading scorer, that's where you try to get everybody else some touches with the ball, start moving the ball a little bit more to help carry that into the second half and really into the rest of the series, because that's not going to be sustainable. And we all knew it wasn't going to be sustainable, many of the things that we saw in the first game. But I think when he had every right to go out there and keep throwing up heat checks for that second half, but then you saw that level of restraint trying to get his teammates involved, I think that sets up very well for the rest of this series, is that we're looking at a team game where it's not just out there to kind of chasing numbers. So we'll see how much that carries over into the rest of the series. But from what we saw in that first game, it was obviously, you know, special. And we can talk a little bit more about what we saw on kind of both ends of the ball, but it was a fun game to watch without a doubt.
And not to get too much into game two quite yet, because Dame did get into get off on a heater to start game two. But so back to game one. So if you remember back to and this was brought up, I heard this on somewhere, can't even give credit, but the fact that Dame was during the in-season tournament when they lost to Indianapolis, remember that thing that they do in December and November? Yeah. Nobody remembers. The Lakers won anyhow. But at the end of the Indiana series, the Indiana players were going up to Dame and giving him like the Dame time, like right in his face. And so he kind of felt that like coming right out, like Dame time activated right off the bat in game one. And then into game two, and then, you know, second half, just like you just spoke to, but like game two, like it started off the same way too. However, I'm feeling like it's a not sustainable proposition where the Bucks offense is Dame shooting 3-pointers double covered from the half court line. Your thoughts?
Well, there's a few things that you look at. I mean, the way that Dame has been shooting, it's spreading the floor. And that's when you see a lot of those actions where you have Bobby Portis doing a shot fake and he's able to put a guy on his hip. And that all starts with Lillard, the way that this offense is moving right now. So if he's able to keep spacing out the floor, we should be getting better looks. And hopefully, moving the ball and looking at more open threes. And then also being able to go to the hoop, which the team has been doing better really in both games. They've been taking a little more aggressive posture on offense, you know, moving to the rack, which, you know, coincides with the different starting lineup that we've seen with Pat Bev and Bobby Portis inserted. I mean, throwing Bobby Portis into the lineup, it doesn't mean that he's your Giannis replacement. There isn't a Giannis replacement. But Bobby usually anchors that second team that's coming off the bench, and throwing him into that different role, they're going with a different look because Beasley's been pretty much atrocious these last couple of weeks. So now he's moved into that bench role, and they're kind of throwing a different look at the team than what they've seen before. And going back to some of the history that you talked with the Pacers, the in-season tournament was tough. It was Halliburton doing that, and Dame Lillard was able to, he had his piece about it, saying, hey, you know, you do that now, we're going to see you all later. This is a long season, and we're going to have to go through the Eastern Conference. So we all kind of knew this was inevitable. But the other piece of that, too, is we can't forget about the ball fiasco that these teams had going into it when Giannis put up his 64-piece, the Bucks franchise record.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that entirely. Yeah.
And then the ball, you know, disappears. They don't think it's the right ball. So they were coming.
They had to give it to that player that scored his first point ever over the 60 piece instead. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was
But, you know, and going back to, you know, kind of
how Larry Bird is that, by the way? God, so Indiana.
but going back to how that first game played, you know, when you look at it, there's things that you know aren't going to be sustainable. The fact that this was a high scoring team, I think they've been under I don't know if that was their first time under 100 or maybe it was the second time all season, but it was their worst offensive output. Corner three in the NBA, we all know that's the closest shot, right? I mean, that's where NBA players try to get those looks. And I didn't have the shot chart in front of me, but they seemed like they hit zero. And they had a lot of looks, a lot of Miles Turner in the corner. And that's what he does. He takes those shots, and he wasn't hitting them. So one of the things when I was looking at, like, how are they going to adjust for these? Usually when you have those close games, you kind of go in there and you're like, okay, here's how we lost. If we'd have done this thing different, maybe it would have looked a little bit differently, or if it had been completely different. But this game was just kind of an anomaly. I mean, the way that the Bucks had so many and ones, the way that Dame was shooting the ball, the craziness of the Pacers shooting. So I don't think there were going to be too many takeaways in terms of Indiana has to fix this or the Bucks have to fix that. Fortunately, I think the Bucks actually probably did have some things that they knew they could work on following that game, because they did let them get back into the game for a little bit. And we did see different looks, but I don't think there was a whole lot for Indiana to really take away with, because it was such an anomaly on their end.
Well, I thought one of the other things is that one of the biggest problems, and I think it's showing in game two now, is the Bucks have a repeated sort of idea of kind of one-man basketball. It seems to happen. The passing in game one is the best passing I've seen the Bucks do in months. The number of times they found, you know, just Bobby, or I mean, even they found Jameson Crowder under the basket with nobody for 5 feet. And it's because they're taking 3 and 4 passes on some of these, especially when Dame was out. And they were distributing much better. The passing was it was the cleanest looking offense they've run all year. And I think that's the one thing the Bucks, I guess, should have maybe taken away from it, is that it really opened up and made the Pacers have to expend a lot of energy on defense. And I don't know if that's the thing they've been doing the back half of the season, when and they've been a, like I said, they've been much better on defense, but this offense has fallen apart, and some of it is just, it doesn't feel like they have an identity or a purpose when they go down the floor. And it felt like they had an idea that they wanted to do stuff when they got down there in game one.
And they had the time off too. I mean, if you look back to the timing of Doc Rivers coming in, this is the first time they really had a chance to practice as a group. But even though he was hired before the All-Star break, he was stuck coaching the All-Star game because of the absurdity of Boston not being able to do it 2 years in a row. But this is like the first time, I mean, that they've really been able to work as a team and really install some schemes. So I think that's just part of the nature of it. And also, you have to look at, you know, where that gravity is pulling that defense. And when you're seeing it, the ball move along the outside a little bit more, and, you know, Giannis will take a couple threes, but he's not a threat from out there the same way. So having that ball moving very fast across the perimeter, it opens up those back cuts and some of those actions that we don't always see when Giannis is attracting so much attention and still scoring despite that.
I think that with the dribble drive does one thing. The ability to get that movement done without the dribble is something that they did a very good job of in game one.
100%.
Because, Giannis' dribble sets up a lot of the offense. And I think they did a very good job in game one of at least getting those shots and finding those places where they could make things happen. And they made a lot of close shots. It wasn't just like, you know, Dame obviously went off, but they found ways to continue to press the offense and make Indiana have to play from behind a lot early, even with their 14-point third quarter.
Well, so and the other big part of that game too, and I think this is one of my takeaways that I took from it, is the Bucks were the first ones out there as the aggressors. You've seen the NBA officiating kind of shift throughout the season a little bit after the All-Star game, where they started kind of letting the guys play significantly more. And the Bucks were,
you know,
the first
once the betting lines get set better, the refs do better. Yeah.
but it goes back a couple of weeks where you had that game where Boston didn't attempt a free throw. And a lot of that, I mean, there's some talk about, you know, they're letting them play now. This is what Adam Silver wanted. And if it is or isn't, they have been letting people play more. And I don't know if Rick Carlisle forgot that. And he was, you know, was still in that zone of being back in the early part of the season. But they were letting them play, and the Bucks were in there kind of taking away their space, being a little bit more handsy and really kind of driving some of the aggressive play and putting Haliburton outside of his comfort zone, which, you know, I still kind of question, you know, how healthy is he, because he didn't look that healthy in the first game, and he had been missing a big chunk of time, and a lot of his stats have really fallen off of a cliff during the second half of the season. So I think that'll be something interesting to watch.
What's that?
I just said, oh, those poor stats. They fell off a cliff. I felt bad for them.
Yeah, fair point.
Yeah, what a terrible way to go.
But still, yeah, it's, I don't know. There's a lot that I don't know. There's been a lot that this back half this year that I think has been rough. What did they have to do to keep the offense rolling in the way that it was rolling in game one? And I mean, the changes they made in terms of that, and can they continue to do that if they don't have Giannis?
I would say this before the series started, and I think when it comes down to having Giannis, if we have him for the majority of the games, the Bucks will take the series. I'm going to jump in a little bit early as far as predictions for the way this is going to go.
You go right ahead.
But it 100% rides on Giannis the way that I'm looking at this series. Right now, again, we're kind of jumping a little bit ahead, but they're going to lose this game, and both teams are going to come out and say good things.
How dare you?
They're going to say, Indiana's going to say the inevitable. You know, we wanted to get one on the other team's home floor. We wanted to be able to flip it to our advantage. We did what we needed to do in Milwaukee, and now we're set coming back to Indianapolis. The Bucks are going to say, we bought Giannis some time. And we know Doc Rivers is going to talk because he can't help himself. But it's going to be his talking points are going to be about giving Giannis more time, giving these other guys a look, really kind of going deeper into the bench, which he did based on Middleton missing some time. So I think they're going to be able to say that their takeaways, getting one of two is what we wanted at this point, and now we're going to be able to kind of move forward that direction. But
it's not a series until the home team loses, man.
Yeah, and that's what I think. If I had to guess right now, I think the Pacers will take game one in Indianapolis when they're hype on their home floor. I think they'll have a little bit of a letdown in the second game four, and then we'll see a 2-2 series. And then from that way, I think the home team's hold serve, and the Bucks win it in seven.
Jeez,
dear God, first round seven games. Woo!
I think that, I guess, in terms of that and the momentum sorts of issues, I think the Bucks needed to win both home games. I think they really did, because Indiana has, they have the mindset. They're the hunter. They are a team that already knows they can beat the Bucks. They beat them 3 out of 4 times in the season, and it's regular season. It's different. It just is. But they're not afraid of this team. They're taunting Dame. They did that, and they did it because they're not afraid of anybody out there, and they're good. And they went on and got Siakam, Siakam's been the best pickup. I mean, that changed that team a little bit here and helped them, especially when Halliburton was injured. But he's been the best player on the floor if you're saying over the course of the full time of these two games, you know, two different games, Dame was the better player in game one, but Siakam was right there and was the better player today. So that change also definitely, I think, bodes in their favor. I think getting 1 out of 2 here is huge for them. I think the Bucks needed to hold serve just to get their own brain right for how they have to go through the rest of the series.
So I think we made the transition into game two with that, and probably about the right time to do so.
Yeah.
Now, Pascal Siakam, I will put him in a single coverage and let him do his one spin move all day. If that's the way that the Pacers are going to beat us, we'll take it at the hands of Pascal Siakam. And I actually think the Pacers with that trade might have gotten worse, though it hasn't aged super well, because Buddy Hield is who they had on their team when they were beating the Bucks earlier in the season. He was that guy that was knocking down corner threes and really stretching the floor for them. And now they don't have the same level of shooter, but they have a little bit more of an athlete in Siakam who does different things. I say it didn't age well because Hield just isn't shooting the ball right now with Philly. But Hield's with Philly now. And he's just not shooting the ball. He's not shooting at the same pace that he was, because he is one of the top shooters in the league, despite some of his shortfalls in other parts of his game. So I think we are also looking at a different Indiana team than we had before. But the way that they played in game one, and I'm interested to see how the adjustments go throughout the rest of the series, is that they were focused on shutting down Halliburton from getting the team involved. because when Halliburton, and he had a couple looks earlier in the game, and you knew he was going to come out aggressive in game two. When he was really the one driving that train, getting looks on his own, pushing the ball and move, and you saw their ball moving a lot in game two. It starts with their point guard, who's a all NBA level player, and you know Siakam, in my opinion, is you keep him in single coverage, especially if we're getting Giannis back, because he's not going to be the one to hurt us to the same level that Halliburton would.
Okay. Well, definitely hurt us in two games at least, but hopefully you're right. And I'll trust that you are, because I trust your take more than mine on that one. So we'll say that.
Siakam also has that. He also has that pedigree from that Toronto team that trumped the Bucks about 4 years ago too. So I mean, that's in his blood too. He was huge during that. So
yeah,
and I think too, he's one of those players who really excels in not being the guy, but then a person who can under-promise and over-deliver in terms of their output. This series isn't going to hang on. You know, no one's going to blame Pascal Siakam if Indianapolis goes down. It's going to be a Halliburton show. He's in that wonderful position where he can go out there and have some great games, but also isn't accountable at the end of the day.
And speaking of guys that are in the background too, I wish Bobby was showing up like how Siakam is. I mean, Bobby did enough heavy lifting during the season with all the other problems that was going on. And to ask him, like, and you had alluded to it earlier, Pete, like, he's not going to be Giannis. However, I do wish that him and Brook Lopez were both about 2 years younger, because that's, you know, we could use Brook Lopez, White Shaq, during the series right now, and Bobby to get on fire like how he has done in the season and whatnot. Take some of it away from Dame. Like you were just talking about with Halliburton, you know, Halliburton's carried the load for the Pacers, and that's where it's going to fall on him. You know, Dame right now is taking on, it's not even what Dame signed up for. You know, he came here to win a championship with Giannis, and now it's, oh, Portland 2.0. Sweet.
Yeah. Here comes AJ Green or AC Green or whatever. It's like, yeah.
Here it is again. Great. Here we are. You know, so I wish that some of the other ones. And it was a little disappointing. I understand what you guys are talking about with you know, Chris getting to the bench because maybe things were getting out of hand. But, like, man alive, like, Chris has to be there. Like, it can't just be the Dame show all the time. Like, Dame came here to be a part of the Bucks machine. And if Giannis falls out, it's not like, I mean, he's the biggest cog in the machine. But at the same time, it's like once he was removed, it's like the machine. I am the machine. But maybe that's the problem with Bud being gone and Griffin being gone, and now it's Doc Rivers' team too. It's like maybe something's been lost here, like because it just feels like now it's like, all right, Dame, carry this team that is made up of a whole bunch of people that supported Giannis, and now he's gone. But okay, here you go. All right. Yeah, huck those threes. I don't know. Maybe.
Well, I don't think we're ever going to see Ewing theory happen where all of a sudden the Bucks are better without Giannis. So that was never in the cards. But there's three players who are accountable, right, on the Bucks, and it starts with Giannis. It's now to Dame, and because of legacy, Middleton is still in there. Mm-hmm. But I think the question that's going to help shape this series is who are we going to see kind of emerge beyond their normal role. I think everyone's looking in Bobby's direction, but there are a lot of people that could make significant impacts. I mean, one of the ones who I'm waiting to see have a game would be Jay Crowder. I mean, he's, again, like some of the others, probably 2 years older than what we're hoping for.
Right, like, and yeah, he's another one. He falls in that crowd, exactly.
If he were just
like,
70 years again.
No. But if he's out there playing defense and all of a sudden we see him knock down three or four threes in a game, he's one who can flip a game the way that he plays. And when we look back to the championship run, you know, PJ Tucker didn't stop Kevin Durant. He made it difficult for Kevin Durant and then was a zero on offense and helped slow things down. So the question is going to be like, who is going to emerge in this series and kind of play out of their role? I don't know if we'll see a Brooklyn Brook come back like we did in the Hawks series. But that's certainly something that they can look at by putting Brook Lopez down in the paint a little bit, but he has been shooting the rock very well. So I don't know if that's the move that you want to do. Try to put him down low and then bring Turner out a little bit, make Turner run the floor instead of keeping him on the perimeter, because Evan Turner is a great player. And he's one that I think is overlooked. He was on the trade block for years. That's also because he's in demand. He's a similar to a younger version of Lopez without the strong inside game that he had as a younger player. But he's one who really hurt us tonight.
Is he available right now?
No, he's playing for Indianapolis.
Oh, so we can't trade for him right now because he seems like exactly the person we need.
Yeah, the way that he plays, I mean, he's a shot blocker. He's very much in that mold of Lopez now. But it's going to be interesting to see. The one player who stood out to me tonight was Nembhard from Indianapolis. And I don't know why I keep calling him Indianapolis. That's weird. They're the Indiana Pacers. But the vibes that I got was almost the Terry Rozier series that he had against the Bucks a couple years back when we still had who he referred to as Drew Bledsoe. Now Eric Bledsoe, who was pretty much out of the league at that point because of the way that Terry Rozier ate him up. And he was just one of those people who kind of emerged, was there for the moment, and was stepping up. Fortunately, I don't think we have a Eric Bledsoe on this team who's just going to disappear in the moments. But it is going to be who do we see step up. And that's where I'm also watching very closely in terms of the substitution patterns that Doc is going to initiate, because he hasn't gone deep. He didn't go deep in game one, and he didn't go deep in game two until later. But is he going to try to match athletes by putting Ajax out there, who we didn't see in game one and didn't see until garbage time in game two? But Ajax is the one who some of the writing has shown that he's the one playing Pascal Siakam in practice. And you have Ty Washington playing the role of Tyrese Halliburton. And according to the Sentinel, as they're practicing, they're focusing on those threes and just moving the ball. They're not taking the ball out of bounds after made shots. They're shooting, even though they're probably not making them in there, but they're shooting at a crazy pace to get the Bucks starters used to taking those looks and having them prepared for that. So and they actually got a lot of compliments. I think Portis is one that spoke highly of him. And what that second team did, especially those G League players, to help set them up for success in game one. And now we'll see how that carries over into game three and beyond.
Well, yeah.
Hey, I'm just going to say something right now. So next year, the three of us need to figure out if the Cincinnati Reds play the Birds in Cincinnati at some point and the Bucks play the Pacers around the same time. And three of us road trip. Let's do it. Indianapolis, Cincinnati. It's only like an hour and a half apart. We need to do this, boys.
All right.
Let's do it.
I thought that was a little further.
Yeah, we can go down there. We can, you know, and at least you said Indianapolis and not Hickory, you know, because that's what I was thinking. Every time I think of Indiana basketball, I just think of Hickory.
It may as well be. The basket's the same height as the one in Hickory.
Yeah,
it may as well
be. The basket's 10 feet tall. The free throw line's only 15 feet away. It's the same distance, boys.
Hey, Hinkle Fieldhouse, I can't remember if we had talked before, but that is a great place to catch a game. I've been fortunate to catch a game there before when I was a student at in grad school.
We went down to see Valpo.
Yes, right. We went to go down and see Valpo play back when they were a team worth watching.
Had their days. So I'm looking at with the guys coming off this bench in this game. I mean, yeah, they threw a lot of guys out there late. I mean, Beverly is starting in this whole set, and you were talking just a little bit ago about, you know, what PJ Tucker was for his team. Beverly is obviously a defensive minded guy. He gets 34 minutes in there, takes 5 shots. He was 0 for 4 for about 40 minutes today of the game time, but and then made that one little kind of turnaround, like it was like an inside spin kind of baseline shot. That was the only shot he made. 5 total points in this game. What did he get in game one? He ends up with 5 in that one as well. What else do we need from him or what's going on there? I mean, the guys we need, I just kind of worried about is like, we got Beverly who's not getting his points, but is playing the defense. And then we've got the rotational stuff, I guess. I'm just.
So John, I guess if we go back like 3 minutes and delete my my comment about how no one's going to choke and not be there for the playoffs. I actually forgot to say that it's probably Malik Beasley at this point, unless something changes drastically. Because he has fallen off of a cliff. And when you're running that lineup with Beverly, playing, you know, hard the way that we want him to, because again, we don't want his position to be generating the points, but then we're looking in the direction of Malik Beasley to put something inside of the net. And we haven't seen that in games now. So I think that's where we're getting a little bit worried in terms of the production there. But, you know, going down the bench, and we've seen AJ Green, Connaughton had a lot more to give tonight than I expected.
Yeah.
And that's because my expectations are usually very low for Pat Connaughton.
Fair.
Very low. But he did one thing I haven't seen him do, and that's put the ball in the basket with a person within 5 feet of him. So that was exciting to see. But also he was there for the moment tonight. And you could see that he is used to these types of situations. He wasn't getting lost on offense. He was moving the ball, and he was sticking with his man on defense, even if he was getting plowed over by Evan Turner. He tried to contest shots. But we need more out of Connaughton. We need more out of those kind of the backup shooting guard, small forward positions. You know, Middleton, right. I think the series could very easily hinge on him. He still ended up finishing with 36 minutes tonight, which is impressive considering that it seemed like it was a lifetime that he had gone to the locker room. I don't know if he just ate something earlier in the day and then just had to sneak back there pretty quick. But it was scary seeing him go down with a potential injury there. But his production and what he's been able to shoot from the mid-range, he was highly efficient again tonight. And he's not forcing it either. And that's the other thing I want to point out is, despite kind of falling apart and not getting baskets towards the end of the game, we're not seeing a team that's really forcing a lot. Where they're just, I mean, Aaron had brought it up before that Dame's taking, you know, these looks. But he's the scorer on the floor at this time. And as the leading scorer and kind of the guy at this point, he has every right for those heat checks. Yeah. And because he's turned a lot of them. I mean, those are good shots for him. I mean, he's made his career off of playing that way. And he's dragged Portland to the Western Conference Finals with that style of play. And I think these teams that the Bucks have right now have a lot more if we were to go deeper into it. We didn't see Gallo. Again, we didn't see Ajax, but if we get into a situation, I would like to see Ajax try to match the speed of Indiana that we're seeing out there. Because right now, I had a text from a friend of mine during the game that's like, will the Bucks start playing defense? And I'm like, they are playing defense. They just can't keep up the tempo, because the only plus athlete really that the Bucks have in their typical rotation is Giannis, and we're missing him today. So I think the next guy, if you're trying to maintain that pace, is like an Ajax, unless you're just going to be subbing people in and out really fast. And we don't have the time to get conditioned that way now that we're two games into a 7-game series.
That's kind of what I was going to ask, is like, do we need to get more time on the bench for a lot of these starters? Because we are spending, I mean, it's a younger team that's running fast. Indiana was moving incredibly fast today, and it just seemed like the Bucks could not do it. The number of times towards the end where they had that problem that we talked about, Aaron and I talked about, where ball goes up on a rebound and I'll watch three Bucks watch it land on the ground among them. I'm like, why did nobody run to that ball? That happened two or three times down the stretch here. I mean, the game was very much out of hand at that point. But at the same point, do they need to increase the rotation there to try to keep these guys fresh for the ends of games, or to try to keep these games from getting out of hand on defense as well? Like, is there a way to handle it that way too?
So I watch at all the games I go to, where I sit, I'm behind the Bucks bench in row 23, that direction. And I always watch like what the rotations are for
stick
who's coming.
Stick brain, yo.
It's great because I like watching the bench to see like how people are reacting there and who's listening to Doc Rivers. And that, you know, if I'd have been on a couple of weeks ago, that's one of the things I would have brought up, is that the amount of buy-in that you have with Rivers at the helm is very different than it was with Griffin earlier in the season.
Better?
It's much better.
Okay.
It's significantly increased. where his Rivers way that he'll typically run a timeout for a long stoppage is he'll get together with his lead assistants, and then he'll talk for about a minute or so, and then he'll come to the bench, and everybody is circled around him. The guys who aren't in the game are paying attention, and everybody's more locked in on what's going on there. So I think that the team is gelling together. And where I got a little bit sidetracked just talking about that aspect of it, but the other thing that the Bucks have maintained through the first couple games is their typical patterns of when they get subbed out. Dame's a guy who likes to play the whole first quarter. And that's one of the things that he talked about when he came in. And you'll see him take that rest at the beginning of the fourth. So they haven't changed their typical rotations yet from how they play,
okay.
With the exception of Portis inserted to the starting lineup. But then it seems like he's been coming out, getting a little bit of a breather, and then still kind of leading that second unit as they move in. So they're still kind of figuring out what this looks like with Beasley falling out of the rotation and only landing 10 minutes tonight and, you know, having 4 points and missing 1-3. So I think watching the rotation will be very interesting. If I were to have a vote on it, I would say I'd like to see more Ajax just because of what he brings physically to the table. And while Crowder has the opportunity to flip a game, I mean, he played 15 minutes tonight and was minus 21 at that time. So we're not getting the most from him that we could in those periods where Connaughton was minus two. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, some of the other ones are misleading as a whole when you're looking at the plus minus. I mean, Beverly minus 27, Lillard minus 24, but they're also making impacts to the game which would not have otherwise been captured.
Okay. What is the thing you want to see happen for game three?
Well, that's a tough one. Like I said earlier, I kind of wrote it off already. Oh. That I think we're just going to go out there and lose. So if I were to say...
Would you like to see something other than the Bucks losing, I guess?
No, yeah, I'd love to see a win. I'd really like to see a win. But in order to change things, I think if I could change something on the spot right now, I would probably try to put Portis back on the bench and okay. maybe go small to start the game. I would put Beasley back in, try to give him a little bit of burn right away. To say, okay. Hey, bud, like, we need you. We're putting you in the starting rotation right now because this is where we want you to be. And then depending if Giannis does or doesn't play, you put Lopez down. Try to put him bullying Miles Turner a little bit early in the game and try to open some inside out and see what the shooters can do with a little bit of motion on the outside as we're putting the ball through the post every once in a while just to kind of switch it up because we haven't seen Lopez play on the block much this series and try to spread it out and just give him a different look to start. But I think we also go back to what we were doing in the first game. We're really emphasizing trying to stop Halliburton. I don't know if he was just kind of playing possum in the first game where he was awful. He looked like he wasn't his usual self. And then he got his rhythm back this game. But I think going back there and just being an agitator. And that's one thing that we can do with some of our bench guys if we're going a little bit deeper is to try to throw them off of their rhythm because this game, we're the ones who took the punch and we didn't have a response to it because it's different when you get hit in the nose versus going out there and initiating the contact. So okay. I'd say switch up the lineup, go more athletic from the start, be a little bit more perimeter oriented and try to be the aggressors right away and knowing that you can jump into your bench and try to get some of those other guys some burn early.
All right. You think they come back on four, though, huh? On game four, you think they go on the road and take game four?
I think they take game four. I think okay. it's going to be Indiana's a young team, so I think this is one of the chances where they haven't had a meaningful playoff game in a while. So I think I can't remember the name of it. It's not Conseco Fieldhouse anymore, but whatever Conseco Fieldhouse is now is the I think that it's going to be rocking. I think it's going to be a tough atmosphere. I think the Bucks would be lucky to pull that one out. And I'm also, I don't have any information different than anybody else, but if Giannis is indeed healthy, I'd say put him out there at this point. But if we have the chance, I mean, I think the must win is game four. I think the Bucks will be there for that one.
Okay.
What I want to see is, as I'm sitting here watching videos of Halliburton and other Indiana Pacers mocking like Bobby and other players on the Bucks, like children. That's what they're fifth grade boys. Getting in their face and being, they're getting in the Bucks' heads right now. I want to see the Bucks come out and just shove it down their throat right off the bat. They're a good team, but they're young and they can be pushed around. And I think the Bucks, through the first, two games tonight, Dame came out and spit in their face right off the bat on game one, and they were put in their place and they never came back, and they were allowed to stick around this game, and they did because they're that annoying little brother. Like, the Bucks have to come out in game three and just stick it to them, be physical. Bobby and Brooke, if you're on your last eighth of a tank of gas, burn it. Like, get it done. Like, just do it. They have to shove it down the Pacers' throats. Otherwise, they're young, and they're dumb, and they don't know what else to do. They'll just keep winning. If you don't tell them to stop winning.
This has probably been the longest I've gone without talking like 10U basketball in a while. But one of the things I've told my son is, like, if you are gonna foul a person, you foul them to the point that they're not gonna make the shot. And that's one of the things that the Bucks absolutely had so many soft fouls tonight, where it was contact, they push through, they score, and they get the free throw. And they just weren't tough enough tonight. And I think that is a big part of the game.
One dude from the Nuggets last night form tackled LeBron. He still made the shot, but at least he form tackled LeBron.
But those are the basketball fundamentals that every kid's taught, right? I mean, if you're going to foul, like, you finish and you don't let him score. I mean, obviously, you're not trying to hurt people. Like, that's the complete wrong answer. Yeah. But you have to play.
You grab the ball or something.
Yeah. If you're going to hack the Shaq. Do it.
And I think there was three or four where it was just like these kind of ticky-tack fouls. And I wasn't a huge fan of the officiating tonight, but it...
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, you can make complaints all day. I mean, I have some of my my favorite officiating crews, and this was not one of my favorite crews out there. I'm personally more of a Scott Foster guy, but... It wasn't. It was definitely not a Scott Foster officiated game tonight.
All right. Oh, all right then. Well, I think that's what we've got for talking this book series, at least for right now. We'll come back to it later. I don't know if you'll be with us next week, Pete, but we'll be talking about it one way or the other. So
yeah, let's see if it works out. I'd like to keep it going. I think we're gonna have a series here, John. And we know the Bucks have, we're gonna have another game back at Fiserv.
Yeah.
And at this point, so it's, I'm looking forward to it. So my take was Bucks in seven. John, what are you looking at?
I'm worried that it gets in their head if they lose this next one.
Pacers in six. Just say it, John. Just say it.
I would say six or seven. I think Pacers take it in six or seven. My one thought is that the Bucks, if they can get that win at home, are going to come back a little fired up. And I think they're going to have enough that if they can push through, I think this goes to seven, actually. I think either way, it's going to go seven. And then it's going to be Bucks at home. But I don't know. I feel uncomfortable with this team right now with a lot of different things that are going on with it. It doesn't feel like one that's going to be good. I think if they get to game six in Indiana, I think Indiana's going to feel excited and hoping to end it at home. But I think the Bucks are just too good and too veteran to allow themselves to go down then. And, if they're back against the wall, I think they're the better team. And I think they didn't care in the regular season the way that Indiana super cared about stupid things like the in-season playoff meaning something to them in the way that it means something to them and the Lakers, but not to, teams that were winning NBA titles. So...
John, how many in-season championships did Michael Jordan have?
Zero. Zero. He had none.
All of them. Bucks in five. That's what I'm saying.
All right.
Wow.
Sense of they're going to sweep it from here on out.
I love you, Aaron.
Sit down. It's going to be fine.
All right.
A gentleman's sweep was not on my scorecard.
Bobby, I appreciate it. Bobby's going to rip off 40 next game. You watch it.
All right. I'm here for it. I'm watching either way.
He knows I have money on him. So that's fine.
He's not betting on the game, just on Bobby.
Again, going back just to on Bobby. Basketball.
Just like the other Portis guy. Not the Portis guy from Denver, but his brother from Toronto.
My kid went to bed wearing his Bobby Portis shirt. So he was like,
Bobby. when he snores at night, is it like, Bobby.
It's actually to the point where he watches. He's like, because he went to the Bobby Portis camp last year and he was like,
hell yeah. Yes.
He didn't use the backboard on that one. He tells me to use the backboard. Nathaniel. He also has the option of dunking too. And you also can't do that at 10 years old.
Yeah.
It's a very different
shot. His fingers touch the rim when he reaches up. It's weird. Yeah. I know, right?
You're 6'10", you do whatever you want. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do what you want, Bobby.
All right,
man. Hey, Pete, thanks for coming on, dude. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, it's been fantastic to have you here and help us understand what we're saying half the time. So that's good.
This is fun. Hey, thanks again for having me. And I'll throw some takes up there in the next couple of days on Milwaukee's best. And really look forward to talking to you all again soon.
Yeah, we'll have our people call your people, which is we'll have Aaron talk to you.
All right. And congrats on the promotion, man. You deserve it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, appreciate it, brother. Take care. We'll see you all soon.
All right. Take care, Pete. Thanks again. All right, so the only thing left now without Pete is to talk about the Brewers, and they've lost two games in a row.
The fact that they're one of the best teams in the major leagues, man, they're amazing. Yeah. What's this?
They're the second highest batting average in baseball behind the Braves. They're still top 10 in pitching in earned runs per game, or earned run average, I guess, whatever. So, I mean, like, they're still doing everything right. They had two rough games here. They had two games against the Cardinals because the Cardinals series had not failed to score at least three runs in any game. They had two games against the Cardinals where they didn't get three runs. They won both of them because they swept the Cardinals. But they win 1-0 and 2-0 in those games. But then they have a rough stretch here. Two games against the Pirates, or the Pirates are able to take advantage of a couple of Brewers mistakes. They get the 2-1 win today. I mean, McCutchen hits a home run in each game. Like, this is just not what you expected.
I mean, McCutchen on the Pirates tortures the Brewers, leaves the Brewers, or on the Pirates, leaves and comes to the Brewers, is okay with the Brewers, goes back to the Pirates and tortures the Brewers yet again.
Yeah.
So.
Either way, the biggest thing was...
God, that's so weird. Like, he should be dead. Like, he's so old.
He's not that old. I mean,
Kutch. I love Kutch. I wish he would have spent his whole career with the Brewers. I'm sorry. He's been around. Like, how is he still a thing? How is he a thing? And how is he torturing the Brewers?
He's got the ability to drive a baseball. We'll say that. He slowed down since he had some injuries after his MVP season. But, you know... But the biggest thing that I have from this week is Milner has to go to AAA. Just he does. I love the guy and I think he's fantastic. I don't think he's got his spots right now. And if he can't hit his spots, he can't pitch. He's very reliant on hitting spots and he can't do it right now. And he is giving up massive hits. He has coming to games and giving up like four home runs. This game the other day against Pittsburgh in a tie game, bring him in a high leverage situation, and he got shelled. Like, they just hit everything he threw. Everything's too high in the zone, and I think he can be saved. I think he just needs to work on his accuracy for the time being.
But you know, with Williams gone to the bullpen's in a shuffle, this is a young team. They're trying to figure things out. I mean, the team is plus 32 in the run differential, which I think puts them about in, just roughly looking at everybody, they're about plus, they're sixth in run differential. Like, they're doing great. Like, yeah, if he had to send Milner down for a little bit to get himself reset, yeah, That's fine. But I wonder how little pressure is being put on him too. Like a dude getting shelled because he's in a high pressure situation versus just running him out there just to like see what he can do. Like I understand, like it's not good for confidence, but at the same time, like I don't think it's this high pressure. Like early season, you know, you work through things, right? And the understanding that Williams is not here.
Yeah, but I mean, like, where they've been relying on a lot of those guys is things like we've still got, you know, Piamps and Uribe and Peguero hitting those big spots and Bryce Miller getting some of the longer inning games. And they're really relying on Milner to come in and do those lefty or, you know, get the left-handed arm in there against some of these guys. And, you know, if he doesn't have it, it has been bad. It's been hard to watch because I really do like Hobie Milner. I think he needs to tweak it.
But at the same time, too, maybe it's a little bit of, you know, it's early season saving, you know, with Piamps and the others, like you're trying to save pitches from them as well, mm-hmm. you know, without Williams in there. And
that's why I say bring somebody else up and let him work on his game.
Maybe, sure, yeah. So whatever. It's a good place to be in where you're up. Is with the record that you have a run differential, you know, granted you lost two in a row, whatever it happens during the season. But yeah, I do agree with you. Like set him down for a little bit, maybe bring somebody else up, you know, see what you got, you know, also too, you know, you got to worry about arbitration if you actually bring somebody up. But so.
I don't know. I mean, like, I'm just saying like, I think he's fine. I'm not worried about it as a team perspective. The two losses don't bother me because that just happens. That's baseball. Nobody wins every series, but at the same time, I just think, especially a road series like this, but I think that the big thing I'm looking at is, I think Milner's a great pitcher and just, I think that if you keep leaving him out there to constantly go out there, I think you can do permanent damage to his psyche. We had to send Burns back down because he was terrible in his first year up.
Burns.
And it probably saved his career. And I think maybe Milner just needs a reset right now to get him back into shape. And then, with the run differential they have, we don't need to push him out there to try to make him fix it in high leverage situations. We can let him do it in a place that's more comfortable where it's not a win-loss situation that matters, and he can fix it then.
Hey, John.
Yeah.
Who is the bullpen if Jack Lemaire was telling you about the bullpen?
The bullpen? Jacques Lemaire would say, sometimes you just got to cut a guy, you know, not just with from the team, you know, with a knife.
With a knife, yeah. Piamps, Burnsy,
and you got Miller and Millersy, and you got the Piamps-y and Pegersies, and yeah, it would be a lot along those lines if we had Jacques Lemaire, because hockey nicknames are just a thing. So, you know, ending everything with C, Burnsy and Piamps-y and all that. But yeah, I guess that's really the only takes we've got left here for Brewers for this week. The two losses are not going to be something I'm going to spend a lot of time on just because they did just sweep the Cardinals, who, despite trying to address their pitching entirely, getting Sonny Gray and all that, they have just not improved in any way that's made this team good, and they don't look good yet. I mean, it's a long season, so we'll see what the Cardinals look like later, but it's going to be the Cubs and the Pirates at this point that we're going to have to spend a lot of time worrying about, and then, you know, the Reds are not gone yet either. Anyhow, that's going to be our show for this week. We did also have if you haven't listened to it already, we did also have the draft special preview that I do with my son, Josh, who watches a lot of film and a lot of films. So we had a lot of names there, a lot of back end of the draft, day three of the draft, guards and tackles to take a look at there. So we got a lot of things in that, and we hope you take a listen to that as well. Remember to follow us on all the different social medias. We listed them at the beginning of the show. Remember, of course, to subscribe to us and share this and rate and review us wherever it is you have. It helps everyone else to find the show. And finally, we do like to thank everybody for being here with us for another wonderful week of Wisconsin Sports Talk. Whether you are in Wisconsin, across the United States, or around the world, we're always grateful to have you with us. Remember, of course, that whether you are on the town, or on the go, it is always on Wisconsin.
This has been the Scotty Johnny Podcast. Remember to find the boys on Twitter at ScottyJohnny1 or online at ScottyJohnny.com. Thanks for listening, and on Wisconsin.